I think the biggest challenge that a lot of overachievers have and that a lot of people have to contend with is dealing with the fact that we're not always perfect, dealing with the fact that, you know, we might do something or might say something that we regret. It's just a natural part of life. I've done 26 marathons. I've completed a full Ironman competition. It's all about allowing people to have an opportunity who otherwise wouldn't have one. And sometimes these life experiences that you wind up having allow for you to be kinder and better, more understanding and more appreciative.
Welcome back to another episode of Inside the Inspired. Certain things happen to certain people because God believes that they can handle them. These individuals, they go through these experiences to share their insights, their perspective, their values as a result of what they've gone through. And today I'm grateful to introduce you to a one-of-a-kind specimen of a human being. From blind at birth to sitting on the bench of the highest court in the state of Michigan, an individual who's run over 20 marathons, an Ironman, a triathlon, a motivational speaker, a disabilities rights advocate, but above all, a very kind human being and someone that I personally had the firsthand experience of witnessing speak, and my life just hasn't been the same since. Very humbled to introduce Justice Richard Bernstein. Welcome to the show. How are you today, sir?
Oh, it's a pleasure. I enjoy the podcast. I think this is such a great thing because I think it really excites people and energizes people. And I think what you're doing is really a beautiful thing, and it's a great time for it, especially with all that's happening in the world.
Well, I'm very humbled to hear that from you. I want to start by asking you, Judge Bernstein, what mission are you on?
That's a great question. I think, you know, you learn to take things one day at a time. That's the way I've kind of approached life, is that there's been a lot of struggles and a lot of challenges, I think, that we've all been facing and having to contend with. And I think the way to approach it is simply one day at a time, hope and pray for the best, and hope and pray that tomorrow will be better than today. So I think that when you ask about mission, I think with everything that's happening right now, I think so many folks that are, you know, part of this or listening to this would probably tell you that their mission is literally nothing more than one day at a time, one step at a time, and just to survive and make it through to the next.
And I think what's particularly uniquely qualified about yourself is that you literally have gone one step at a time. You've right. suffered tragic incidents and recovered from those terrible tragedies and still maintained to move in such a robust manner. And I think a prime place to start is with your mindset, the durability and resilience that you've exhibited over the course of your career in multiple disciplines. So let's first start as a scholar and an attorney. What was it like taking on such an intense decision to become an attorney?
Well, I really felt that this was a way that you could make a difference for people, that you could have an impact, and that you could do things that could make life better for folks. And I've always kind of had to face and deal with being bullied for, you know, pretty much a good part of my life. So I realized that this was the kind of a way that maybe you could step up, that you could try to fight back, that you could represent folks, that you could give people a voice. And I really felt that through the law, this could be an empowering thing that could have a really positive and powerful impact and ultimately create real change that could make a difference in the lives of folks that, you know, otherwise go unrepresented and otherwise have to live without a voice.
And obviously it was very, I'm figuring out how to say this kindly, different experience for you in taking in the information, right? Yes. How are you able to take exams and handle the vast amount of information to prove that you understood the knowledge to the degree that's necessary in order to perform the task?
So I have to memorize and internalize everything. So at the Supreme Court, we have about 25 cases that come to us every week that we discuss at conference. And so people will say, okay, if you have 25 cases, you know, do you use Braille? And the answer is that Braille is not effective. Because if I give you one textbook page, you're going to give me like 65 Braille pages. So Braille's not going to work. Then people say, okay, well, do you use technology? Well, technology is not going to be effective because if I'm on my computer, I'm not able to participate in the conversation with the other judges. And if that's the case, then I'm not really able to have a strong voice for what I want the court to do. So what I do is I literally have to memorize and internalize everything, commit it all to memory. And then what ultimately happens is that the commissioners will say, okay, justices, we are now on case 18. And they'll go on to explain that case 18 is a carjacking on Woodward Avenue that resulted in two homicides. When I hear carjacking on Woodward Avenue resulting in two homicides, that's my mental trigger, and I'm able to recall the case in its entirety. And ultimately, in addition to that, I also have to recall all the common law cases. The cases that work for me and the cases that work against me are all materials that I'm responsible for and have to know whenever I go into conference. So the way that a blind person does it is we just rely on our memories. We have to internalize, we have to memorize, but in the end, it usually kind of finds its way to work out.
In terms of what, can you help the audience understand? Maybe there's someone out there who struggles to internalize and memorize information. And here we have an individual who does it at the highest levels with the gravity of those circumstances, obviously being denser than any average circumstance. How do you go about that internalization and memorization?
A lot of repetition. And I get one additional clerk. Instead of having five people, I get six people. So I get an additional clerk who is responsible for allowing me to commit all of that knowledge to memory. So I get one additional person, and then ultimately it really just comes down to just the work product, working at it, just internalizing, doing everything you can to learn the material, to know the material. And also you come to realize that people's entire lives are kind of hanging in the balance. So no one really cares if you have a disability. Nobody cares if you're blind. You've got to get it right because people are truly depending on you.
Something that I love that you say is that accommodations are the great equalizer. And as someone who suffered from disabilities growing up, and I also have a background as a criminal prosecutor in the Bronx, special victims, so I have a bit of understanding of the degree that you handle.
Right.
Not the experience, obviously, but just a limited understanding. In terms of how you talk about accommodations as the great unifier, as the great equalizer.
Okay.
How have accommodations played a role in your life to the point where you are able to perform at such a high level?
Well, what they do is they allow people to realize what is possible. And they create inclusion and they create opportunities for inclusion. And so when you accommodate folks, you're really getting people that can do an amazing job, that can have a very positive impact, and that can do great work. And I think that's the thing. It's all about allowing people to have an opportunity who otherwise wouldn't have one. And so often when you're dealing with disabilities, people tend to exclude those with disabilities, those with special needs. But they don't realize that if you give people with special needs an opportunity, if you give them a chance, you're going to be wildly, wildly surprised with how well they can do. Because what tends to happen, if you provide accommodations, if you provide an opportunity, and if you provide a chance, you will get folks that have resilience. You will get folks that have strength. You will get folks that who are used to struggle. You will get folks who are accustomed to challenge and hardship and difficulty. And you will get people that have no choice but to get things done, because ultimately this is all they can do. And they simply don't have an option but to be successful and to find a way to move forward.
I love that you brought up resilience and durability. I think that obviously you have a dense resume filled with experience reflecting those traits. When it comes to the power of reframing, it's definitely something that you have talked a lot about, and I think that people in today's day and age, magnified by social media, the internet, and the like, technology, that people tend to lose perspective. Someone in your position who's achieved so much with having been bullied and suffering from a disability, I don't even want to do you an injustice by saying your suffering seems like you're thriving.
That's very kind.
How have you been able to reframe, and maybe how can people reframe the challenges in their life to view them as stepping stones towards their potential success?
Well, I tend to focus more on athletics, and I find that through athletics, that gives me my strength, that gives me my ability, that provides me the opportunity to do things. And so, as you said in the introduction, I've done 26 marathons. I've completed a full Ironman competition, which is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and a 26.2-mile run. And I think what you find when you dive into a frigid body of water like Lake Coeur d'Alene was, when it was 55 degrees and you're swimming in total darkness and you're getting kicked in the face over and over again and you can't brace for the ensuing impact. And then other people get tangled in the rope that connects you to your guide and it starts taking you below the surface and you have to kind of work through that so that you don't drown. And then you finish that and then get onto your tandem bike and ride 112 miles, you know, through the mountains and then do a full 26.2-mile marathon. I think that the strength that takes in endurance competitions is incredibly vital for me, because doing endurance competitions is remarkably powerful and it allows for your spirit to overcome what the body can't do. And that's the thing that I really, really appreciate about these kind of endurance competitions, is that, you know, ultimately it's basically you versus yourself. And you're able to see that even with the body's weakness, the spirit can guide the body and can ultimately transcend if given the opportunity. So I find in answering your question that through endurance competition, like an Ironman or like a marathon, that allows for you to, as you asked in the beginning of our conversation, that allows for you to understand and appreciate mission. That allows you to understand and appreciate your focus. It allows for you to understand and appreciate your flesh and blood. It allows for you to understand and appreciate the limitations that are put to you by your body, but also the resilience and the strength that your soul can have in pushing the body forward through these various types of challenges that you have to go through.
Judge Bernstein, I was getting the chills as you were speaking for a couple of reasons.
You are such a kind person. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. And it's been such a challenging time that having an opportunity to talk with you and spend time with you makes all the difference.
I appreciate you. And I'm going to share why. So just for the audience, I actually got the chance to see Judge Bernstein speak when I believe I was around 17 years old. I'm 33 now.
Oh, wow.
And I saw you at the Friendship Circle, where about a little less than a year ago, I did a fundraiser where I performed 1,018 pull-ups in 4 hours, and wow, we raised over $20,000 towards the Friendship Circle.
Wow.
And a big part of the inspiration for that was seeing someone like yourself who did it not even being able to see.
That's amazing though.
Hey, look who's talking.
It's pretty remarkable. That's impressive. A pull-up is tough. That is
And you meet different sides of yourself, I find, when you go through experiences like that. And I'm curious, what are the sides of yourself that you've met in swimming in the darkness, running over 25 marathons, and just performing at the level that you do?
You meet some dark sides and you meet some light sides, right? You know, nobody's perfect. Everybody has their own struggles and their own challenges and their own difficulties. Everybody has certain parts of their life that are excellent and wonderful. And then everybody has certain parts of their life that, you know, make things more challenging or make things more difficult. And I think that ultimately, you know, you have to realize when you're experiencing life and going through life, I think one of the big things is that nobody's perfect, right? We do the best that we can to live the best lives that we can. But I think the biggest thing, and I'm willing to bet that your listeners and you yourself probably have the biggest challenge with, is we all at a certain point in our life are going to make mistakes. We're all going to do things that we regret. We're all going to, you know, have that one chapter in our life that we wish didn't occur, didn't happen. And I think that for folks that really have achieved a lot and really have worked hard their entire life to do different things, I think that's the biggest challenge. And I have found in my life that, okay, you do all of these great things and you work as hard as you possibly can. But then again, no one's perfect. We all do things like make a mistake or let people down or do things that we wish, you know, hadn't been done. And I think the biggest challenge that a lot of overachievers have and that a lot of people have to contend with is dealing with the fact that we're not always perfect, dealing with the fact that, you know, we might do something or might say something that we regret. It's just a natural part of life. And I would say, when you ask, you know, what is the biggest challenge that people like you and I and a lot of your listeners have to deal with, is coming to grips with the fact that, you know what, we're not perfect. We're human. We do things that unfortunately we regret, and having to work through that can be the biggest challenge. Everybody in the work that we have done has said something or done something that's hurt a person or that's had a negative impact on somebody else that was unintentional. And I think coming to grips with the fact that, okay, you can go through life and do the best that you can, but you have to realize that every single person is flawed. Every single person is human, and we have to allow ourselves to be able to make those kind of mistakes that make us realize that, okay, you know what, no matter what we achieve, whatever we accomplish, whatever we do, we're still human. And I think sometimes dealing with our own selves and dealing with our own shortcomings can sometimes be the biggest challenge and the biggest difficulty.
I love the way that you phrase that. And no matter how many marathons or pull-ups or competitions that we do, it's still like we have to face that person in the mirror and and the voice in our own head.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, we're not always so perfect. Sometimes we just make mistakes and we fall short. And, you know, that can be the hardest thing for people to have to contend with or deal with.
What's interesting is we share a sentiment that the way you phrase it is athletics represents all forms of life.
Right.
I go a bit narrower for strength training in the sense that I believe it represent that it's a metaphor for life. And right. What I mean by that is we're often stronger in the eccentric or negative portion of a movement than we are on the positive side, the concentric, meaning on the way up. So for example, in a pull-up, when you pull yourself up, it's in theory harder, but you're actually stronger when you're lowering yourself down. And for me, being stronger on the negative portion of the movement represents something that shows that we're often stronger than we believe we are. And like we said at the top, certain things happen to certain people because they can handle it, versus other people may be crushed under the ice if it was to happen to them. And they may not be able to share those same insights and perspective like someone who's been through everything that you have. Mm-hmm. And so as a judge, as an attorney, there's cases that come across your desk. And even though you didn't ask for those cases, they become your responsibility. How do you manage and compartmentalize your mindset when dealing with the gravity of the cases that you handle on a daily basis?
Well, in all those situations, you simply do the best that you can. You know, the cases that I'm proud of are the cases that I deal with that contend with wrongful conviction. And you just have no other option but just to do the best that you possibly can. There was a case where, you know, ultimately I just remember there were two young men who were convicted of murder and spent 18 years in prison, but they didn't do it. And I was able to write the opinion that allowed for them to have their freedom. That's the kind of thing that allows you to feel positive or powerful of what you're able to do, you know, within this position. I was asked to write the Flint water decision that basically gave a voice to the residents of Flint who were poisoned by their governments. And that was, you know, something where you realized, okay, you know what? There's 150,000 people who are going to be impacted by this. I had the opportunity to write an opinion that helped change environmental regulations, that people who were living in industrial areas had a say in the plants that were being built and smokestacks and the type of pollution and toxins that were being released into their neighborhood where they hadn't had one before. You know, I was played an active role in a case that basically, you know, ultimately prevented guns from being brought into schools. So these are the kind of things that you look at and the kind of effect that ultimately comes about as a result of these types of changes. I've played a lot of written a lot of cases that involve police and the role that that's going to have in terms of enforcement and how enforcement is done in different cities across Michigan. And so it really does touch upon all aspects and all elements of life. And it's something that, you know, I've gotten to be a part of, which is a incredibly powerful experience where you realize the effect that you're able to have and the impact that you're able to have and what that means to people in their own lives and the effect of people and what role you play in the lives of folks across the state. And that is ultimately kind of when you talk about how does the gravity work or what does it mean, those are the kind of things that you ultimately look to, because you realize that every case is significant, every case has an effect, every case has an impact, and every case is going to impact and affect another person.
I love how you address impact as a key pillar, as something that you speak about. Obviously, that landmark case that you were sharing, I mean, there's been movies made about what happened over there. I did not realize that you were the one that wrote that opinion. I'm sorry for not doing further research about that. I would have had. When we do this in person, you can bet I'll be having some questions.
Yes, no, I look as well.
You suffered a very aggressive, catastrophic injury, even having built your body to the stature that you were able to and the level that you did. And I'm curious, it's kind of going to be a compound question. How did you manage your emotions and your thoughts and your mental health in that particular time of your life? And how were you able to bounce back to then continue to run a marathon after the fact?
Sure. And it's still with me today, because the injury was so catastrophic that I still feel the pain of it constantly, because I was hospitalized for over 10 weeks, like in the hospital for 10 weeks with this injury. So it was a pretty intense situation. I had to learn how to walk again and do all this stuff all from the beginning. And it was pretty intense. And the pain of that injury is still with me today. So I feel it constantly. It's always there. And it's, you know, always something that basically is generates a part of who you are. But I still have done a number of marathons since then. I don't do them that well. I just like to go out and participate as much as I can and be a part of the experience. And even though I'm not doing it to the degree I used to do it or with the ability I used to do it, I'm still able to participate. I'm still able to do it. And I'm still able to feel that level of participation that I have come to love. So you just have to kind of move on, but with the pain that I have to suffer each day makes it a little bit difficult because the injury was so bad. But, you know, that is something that kind of leads to other things, and you have to kind of try to work through that as much as you can, so that way, you know, you're able to still try to participate, try to be out there, and try not to lose the life that you love and the people that you love and the experiences that you love because of something that is just a, you know, tremendous setback.
How have your experiences in athletics, endurance events in particular, helped you manage your emotions?
I think it gives you a sense of confidence. I think it gives you a sense of pride. I think it gives you a sense of self-esteem. And I think that when you do Ironman and you do marathons, those are so painful and those are so difficult that ultimately other things that you do in your life aren't going to be as painful. They're not going to be as traumatic. They're not going to be as challenging. They're not going to be as difficult. So it doesn't, it makes it so it's not, once you can get through that, you kind of find that the other things that you are set out to do aren't going to be as difficult. They're not going to be as hard. They're not going to be as challenging. They're not going to be as painful, because if you can get through a marathon or an Ironman, you're able to get through other things in life that aren't going to be as difficult as that. And it gives you that perspective.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's one of those, like a trail of evidence, a lot of proof that you give yourself of what you're capable of. And to your point, confidence, where when you do enough, it's kind of unreasonable for you to believe that you are not a capable person. In fact, because you've done so much, you are a capable person, and reinforcing that day in, day out, so that it never leaves you, and almost like acting your way into that type of person by doing these things, you become a different person. Correct. And at least in my experience, I've run a couple marathons, I've done a 50 miler, I've done some other intense physical events. We'll see what this year brings.
Sure.
I'm curious, you also have this sentiment where you celebrate the small things.
You try to, you know, because those are the kind of core elements of life, right? Going to a restaurant, being with friends, being with family, you know, those are the things that kind of go into life. Those are the things that kind of give life its core value and give life its core meaning. Those are the things that, you know, I think really kind of give life its ultimate beauty and its ultimate nature. So those are the kind of things that I think, you know, teach that resilience, teach that strength. But life is kind of a conglomeration of little things that ultimately create a big thing.
So what are the small things for you now? How are you going about celebrating them?
Well, that's a great question. Small things would be getting together with friends. Small things would be having the chance to be outside. Small, and when you're in the hospital, that's not something you really got to do. Small things are trying to do things like this, meet a new friend like yourself. You know, small things kind of are those types of things that you can look at and say, wow, I got to experience that. I got to do that. And I think those are the things that kind of give life its value, give life its meaning. And it's not really the big things, but the small things that really go into life are what allow it to be fulfilling and ultimately meaningful.
What's training like for you now? What's the next challenge and obstacle that you're training for?
Sure. Now I've kind of cut back a little. I just do the New York City Marathon every year. That's just my rule. That's just my thing. That, you know, I just did my 26th this past November. And my goal is just to participate in the New York City Marathon, do it on a yearly basis, because it's a tradition that I love. And so every year I do the marathon, I participate in it. And that for me is kind of the most moving experience or moving thing. So I'm not going to do any more Ironman. I don't think my body will allow for it, but I will always continue to do the New York City Marathon. It's not going to be fast. I'm not going to have any PRs. But ultimately, I'm still going to participate and do that on a yearly basis. And that's just my overall goal.
It's a very commendable one. Nonetheless, people don't even run a marathon in their life. You're like, I'm going to do this on an annual basis, because it's
like to miss it. It's something that I really value and enjoy. So I don't like to miss it. I really like to be a part of it.
It's definitely, this year was definitely special. Last year, I guess, right? We're in 2024.
Yep. I did this last year and we'll be doing it again in November. And it is something that I look forward to, and I mark the year by it.
There's a question that I pose to all my guests that I'm not going to pose to you.
Okay.
If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now, assuming he's in that ideal spot, were to fly in and offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
Oh boy, I think what he would say to me would be, one day at a time, just do the best you can. Like we talked about in the beginning of our conversation, just do the best you can. Just take it one day at a time. Just take it one step at a time. But then I hope he would say to me something is the fact that things usually, hopefully, find their way to work out. And hopefully they work themselves out for the best. And hopefully, as challenging and as difficult as it is, you're able to continue and move through life.
Justice Bernstein, thank you so much for your time today. Please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I guess they can keep up on either Facebook or Instagram. And I guess it's just the, you know, Richard Bernstein, Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court. And I'm just going to part with you with one last story, because I like to share this story because it's Please. Something I try to live on of. And it's the story that our audience is going to know. It's the story of Jacob and the angel. And it's a story I always share whenever I speak. It's a story about how the angel came upon Jacob deep into the night, and there existed an immense battle. And the battle raged until the dawn. And then when the sun rose, the angel blessed Jacob and gave him a new name, the name of Israel, which is translates to mean one who struggles with God. We also learn from the story that Jacob was not left uninjured. He was given a shattered hip. He had great pain, and he would walk with a limp for the remainder of his days. And I believe that the reason this happened to Jacob was it was only through that understanding of pain and struggle and difficulty that he was able to relate to those who he led. And it was only through that he was able to become a leader and the father of a nation. So I think that whether a person who's listening to us today has a physical disability, whether they have an emotional challenge, whether they're suffering a tremendous loss, whatever it is, I think the idea is that you try to look back to Jacob and try to realize that through his pain and through his struggle and through his challenge, he was able to be a great leader. But I believe he was only able to be a great leader because of his pain, because of his struggle, because of his challenge, and because of his difficulties. And his human flaws. And it's through those human flaws and those setbacks that he was able to connect with those in which he was sent to lead.
Justice Bernstein, I'm very grateful for your time today. Thank you so much. I've learned so much, and I will continue to follow your journey. And I'm looking forward to the next time we could do this in person.
Thank you so much. I am as well. And God bless you and your listeners.
Thank you.